wake up in the morning, 4:20.
Yeah, I start 6 o'clock, working in the MP's office.
Cleaning this library,
yeah.
The members' lobby. It's a privilege, a seat of the nation, and you are part of the house. You know, it's something that you have to cherish about it.
Yeah, to see true. The MPs and all, yeah. Mr. Speaker, you feel there. Proud.
I'm dreaming.
When I first walked into the chamber as a member of parliament, it's incredibly awe-inspiring. Suddenly, the people that you grew up watching on television are the people that you're sitting next to in a chamber. But there are certain rules, like you don't step over the white line in front of you. You are here fundamentally because you are going to disagree.
Order! I order! I appeal to the House to calm down.
I packed up all my courage to walk in on my own and try and get everything right, that I didn't actually know how to walk out. Which way I should go, or do I nod to the speaker? Some things that you just have to learn one step at a time. What was really important is knowing what your voice sounded like in the chamber. As a woman, I think you want to make your voice sound powerful. You are in a place that's got this amazing history and this amazing purpose. When constituents feel that there's something they want to say and you're able to express it and that is able to be heard, it makes a massive difference. Every day you have to just pluck up the courage. That slight fear never actually goes away.
Well, that's what people don't know about Parliament. All they see is a lot of people up at the dispatch box shouting their heads off. So much more goes on here. So when I first walked into Parliament, 16 years old, very new to catering, there was a few that I thought were very frightening gentlemen with knives and chopping meat up and that. So I introduced myself, my name's Terry, I'm the new commie. And I've been here for nearly 40 years.
But we'll be here serving hot meals until 3 o'clock. No rest for the wicked, as they say.
There are 12 kitchens. We go down to Millbank, Portcullis House, 1 Parliament Street. They deal with fine dining, cafeterias. We're starting to do market food and street food. Very honoured to receive a MBE. Not only did I get it for catering, I also done some charity work as well, but mainly for working here for all that time. I was actually born in the General Lion Inn, which is directly facing Parliament, so you could say I was destined to come here and work.
The reporters' room is full of 16 people beavering away, listening to their audio and typing quickly together, like bees in a hive or something. I'm a committee sub-editor for Hansard. It's my job to help to record the proceedings and debates of the House of Commons. I used to be a teacher, a modern languages teacher. My attempts at disciplining the kids were not wholly successful. I like working with words. There's an interesting difference between the spoken word and the written word. Often when someone is speaking, they are under pressure. They're being barracked by the opposition. They are very tired or they are feeling nervous. So often what they say, understandably, would not work very well on the cold page. We're just translating, if you like, so that what could be readily understood live, you see their body language, you have all the context of the immediate surroundings, can also be understood when you pick up the report. One very important aspect of Hansard is that we're obviously completely politically impartial. It wouldn't do for any Member of Parliament to come and try and change retrospectively what they said. We are about what actually happened, not what they think should have happened.
One time when I was fairly newly appointed as a peer, I came in on a Sunday evening, it was late summer, and I walked through Westminster Hall and there was not a soul there, and the sun was slanting in. There was such a sense of history, I cannot tell you. I had to stop and just sort of absorb it. I think it is a great honour to be a representative of the House of Lords. We've changed a lot of the rules and conventions in the House over the years, but I think that the ones that remain are actually quite important because what they tend to do is enhance and underline the need for courtesy. The sort of politics that we do, which is to revise government legislation, requires a degree of courtesy. The chamber of the House of Lords is a very different one from the House of Commons, and we are much more polite. We have a great deal more courtesy, we give way to people, and we don't shout and barrack from what is called a sedentary position. We don't have enough women as yet. We certainly haven't reached the 30%. We're about 21%. It's improving all the time. But one thing I would say is that the women we do have in Parliament are extremely active.
Everybody looks at Big Ben. It's not the most accurate. Obviously, you have atomic clocks. We still have a duty to keep the clock within plus or minus 2 seconds of time. We do this by using old pre-decimal pennies. On the pendulum, there's a little collar, and by putting a penny on, it speeds the clock up by 2/5 of a second. If the clock's running fast, we take a penny off. If the clock's running slow, we'll put a penny on. First impressions of the clock is just its sheer size. It is enormous. So every Monday, Wednesday and Friday, there'll be at least two of us up here winding the clock up. We have to be up here for things like New Year's Eve. When everybody else is outside enjoying themselves, we're up the clock tower. If we get it wrong, the world knows about it. We do Remembrance Sunday. The cannons are fired in time with us up here, so we actually have two serving members of the armed forces up here relaying signals for everybody out on the parade. It's the sheer responsibility of looking after the world's most iconic clock. It's just a wonderful place to work, really.
So we're currently sat at the console of the Harrison & Harrison organ in Westminster Abbey. During the daytime, we can't practice because of all the visitors. We tend to use the evening hours. It's a great privilege to be in the Abbey late at night in a more or less empty building. It's a very wonderful time in its own way to be practicing. Some of the most awkward moments of services are actually before they've begun. Up in the organ loft here, we are in the heart of the Abbey, right in the middle, really, of everything that's going on. But actually, our vision is not particularly good. It's actually when people are arriving and knowing when we should start certain pieces, when particular people have turned up who require a fanfare, perhaps. And so the organ loft here at the Abbey is very well equipped with television screens. We've got cameras in various places. There's also an audio link so we can hear quite clearly what's going on in different parts of the Abbey. You see the two great cases as you approach the choir, but a lot of the organ is actually up at triforium level. It's actually dispersed more than one might expect. The organ really is part of the building. It's integral to its fabric. Once the organ is playing, it really brings the building alive.
There was quite a lot of planning, as you can imagine, for something such as the royal wedding. At least 8 months beforehand. It involved a great deal of detailed liaison with Buckingham Palace over the seating in the Abbey and the actual stewarding on the day. We had a great number of our own royal family, but there were also 57 other heads of state, governor-generals and realm prime ministers, also the friends of the couple, relatives of Catherine, together with people from her own village. They needed to be looked after as well.
So we had to make sure that the cameras fitted in with the seating, to make sure that the media coverage wasn't intrusive, so that the couple could have the wedding that they wanted. You wanted to make sure that they had their day. And there was a global audience of about 3 billion of the event, which we just tried not to think about most of the time. We just treated it like any other service, but, you know, maybe just with a little bit more of a flourish, I guess.
We ask our visitors to be still for a minute to offer a prayer. We give thanks for the life of our new prince and for his parents, the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge.
Yes, we have these vast numbers of people coming into the Abbey in the summer, about 6,000 or 7,000 people a day. Westminster Abbey used to be a Benedictine monastery. One of the things we say to all of our staff is, again, from the Benedict's rule, everybody that comes to the monastery could be Christ himself, and treat that person like you treat Christ. The Shrine of St. Edward the Confessor is particularly special. Over my time at the Abbey, I've come to know more and more about Edward, and I do feel he's actually an inspirational character, and he actually really showed in his life loving one's neighbour and caring for the poor and the sick and the vulnerable, as well as being, obviously, the king. Holding those two things together in his life is a real example to us in a place which is very grand in many ways, but actually needs to be really engaging with people with all kinds of needs. There are lots of very large services where we'll be celebrating the life of an individual who's made an outstanding contribution. Or it might be an organisation. We had a service not so long ago to celebrate the National Health Service. It is a wow place, and every time we go into these places we ought to be giving thanks that we can be there.
Treasury is quite an odd place. You can sort of sit in the Treasury and never really leave. People tend to come to you. On the numbers, first of all, there are about 1,000 people here, which is, I think, quite small given the sort of scope and influence we have. I mean, crudely speaking, the role of the Treasury historically has not really changed. It's tax and spend. I think the modern Treasury has developed somewhat. We have an economics role also. Current economic questions such as how do you get growth into the economy, fixing the financial services industry. And there isn't really a sort of part of public life which the Treasury is not involved in. James I said of the Treasury, you know, all treasurers must be hated if they're going to do good service by their masters. And, you know, I hope we're not hated, but we do play quite a sort of difficult role. The classic cycle is the budget cycle. And the atmosphere at that time is quite frenetic, but it's a very, very good buzz. Really like the courtyard, actually. Every so often, if they can bear it, a pair of ducks come in the courtyard, and I quite like it down there. It's quite serene. I think my favourite sound is sort of first thing, I sit by the window, and, you know, I quite like silence, actually. It's a very interesting role. I think I'm sort of about the fourth person who's done it since the Second World War, and people tend to stay in post.
I've worked for the Treasury for over 41 years and have been privileged to be involved in running this wonderful building for 20 of those years. You might look from the outside and you think, gosh, that looks like a museum. But when you come inside the building, given what we did in refurbishing it about 10 years or so ago, you've actually got a thriving workplace here. So whereas in the past the Treasury would be very, I used to call it monastic type of working, now you've got a very open, vibrant culture in here. In the old days, you could walk in the mornings, you may not see anybody, and then you walk out in the evening. Now, everybody interacts all of the time. A lot of the noise that you'll hear in here will be laughter and debate. There's also, though, I think, the delightful sound of birdsong in the internal courtyard to remind us of the natural world. But I think there's something uniquely special about hearing the sounds of Big Ben striking and the bells ringing from the Abbey on special occasions. There was a fascinating incident where a pigeon was trying to get in through one of the doors from the garden, which was then assaulted by a magpie, making a very loud noise. which then in turn was chased by a crow, making a similarly loud noise, and then a seagull thought, well, I'll join in, and came along and attacked all of them. And eventually they all flew out, but that was a fascinating thing to experience. Well, in terms of the pure history of the building, then I think the Churchill Room overlooking Parliament Street is for me the standout room.
So this room is the Churchill Room, and it's called that because this is where Churchill gave his speech on the 8th of May 1945, V-Day, to the crowds in the street to announce victory in Europe.
In the 1920s, the Imperial War Committee had a look at what was the safest buildings to house government in the event of aerial bombardment. This building was deemed the most secure. Churchill had his rooms, his bedrooms, his office, a few other sort of cabinet-type rooms on what is ground floor of this building. It was really sort of the centre of intelligence for the war effort. The actual sort of function of the war rooms was the military intelligence, the actual HQ of government. So you had the war cabinet, the national government. The reason why I got involved in the History Society was that my grandmother actually worked in the cabinet war rooms. When I first started working here, I met my gran a few weeks later and I had a map of the area and I said, oh, I work there. And she said, I used to work. And she pointed to the exact same spot. Kind of gave me a very personal connection to this building.
Okay, well, this is the Supreme Court poem, which was written for us by Sir Andrew Motion. You can see it in our exhibition area, and it's also on the stone benches outside the court.
Tides tumble sand through seas long lost to earth.
Sand hardened into stone.
Stone cut, then brought to frame the letter of our four nations' law.
And square the circle of a single court.
Here justice sits and lifts her steady scales.
Within the abbey's sight and parliaments,
but independent of them both.
And bound by truth or principle and argument.
A thousand years of judgment stretch behind.
The weight of rights and freedoms balancing.
With fairness and with duty to the world, the clarity time-honoured thinking brings.
New structures but an old foundation stone.
The mind of justice still at liberty.
Four nations separate, but linked as one.
The light of reason falling equally. Well, principle and argument are interesting words. The cases that we hear are disputes between at least two people, and the way in which we hear them is by listening to the arguments on each side of the case. And there is a phrase which is that argued law is tough law. If you thought something through by listening to both sides of the argument, the result is more likely to be right. But of course, principle is what guides us. We are all the time referring to centuries of past decided cases in order to work out what the principle is. And what we promise to do is to do right to all manner of persons after the laws and usages of this realm without fear or favour, affection or ill will. I've sworn that oath many times. I still find it very moving, and it does sum up what we're trying to do in this court.
A few kids came into like watching the court one day. As I was putting my papers away, they stopped me and said, oh, so what do you do? And they were like quite surprised to see someone of my background there. I think the fact that you don't see many people of ethnic minorities be in my position, and the people you're actually working with, like some of the greatest minds in their profession, working side by side sort of thing. Before the case starts each morning, we've got to like lead in the justices. I would stand by the door. As they come into the room, I'll say, court will rise. And at that point, everybody would stand up. They'll bow. I close the door very quietly. Once I know they're okay, I'll sit down and then I'll begin to listen to the case and to see if they need any help.
My lords, I appear with Emma Dixon for the appellant in this matter, and my learned friend, Miss Cassie Smith, appears for the Secretary of State.
The key thing is that for a case to be given permission to appeal to the Supreme Court, it has to raise an arguable point of law. In most instances, cases will have been through at least two levels of court below. And the courts below will have dealt with the facts, and if it's a criminal court, the evidence. So when a case comes here, it has to be because there is a point of law which needs to be clarified. And once the justices here have given their judgments, that point of law has been clarified then for all future cases where it is raised. Some recent examples, case of Smith versus the Ministry of Defence, where the court had to decide whether families of soldiers who died on operations could attempt to sue the Ministry of Defence.
So the court holds that the question whether the negligent claims in this case entail subjecting the MOD to duties that were unreasonable or excessively burdensome cannot properly determine.
We had another case recently, Bank Malat, an issue about the application of sanctions to a bank which had been involved in Iran. Actually, thinking about Parliament Square, a very important case arose from the issues over MPs' expenses, whether the MPs could and should be tried in the normal criminal courts, or whether this was an issue which only Parliament could decide.
These are the first criminal prosecutions of members of the House of Commons based on a member's dealings with Parliament for over 300 years.
Well, it's very important that people understand what goes on in this building. It's delivering justice on their behalf. It's very important that people are able to come in and watch the justices at work.
Well, that's what people don't know about. So much more goes on here.
Well, it's very important that people understand what goes on in this building.
When you come inside the building, you've actually got a thriving workplace.
Every time we go to these places, we ought to be giving thanks that we could be there.
So much more goes on here. So much more goes on here. So much more.